Operation Analytics Data Point podcast. My name is Brett McRae, an analyst consultant with Prescience Initiatives Group. Joining me today is Catherine Zimmerman. Catherine is a senior analyst in the Al-Qaeda and Associated Movements team lead for the American Enterprise Institute's Critical Threats Project. Her work has focused on Al-Qaeda's affiliates in the Gulf of Aden region and associated movements in Western and Northern Africa. She specializes in the Yemen-based group Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Somalia, Al-Shabaab. Katie is also the author of a September AEI report titled The Al-Qaeda Network, A New Framework for Defining the Enemy. Katie, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Doing well, Brett.
Great. Well, let's get right into it. So, Katie, to begin, I'd like to ask you a question, and that's surrounding current U.S. counterterrorism strategy. And my question is, if you just had a couple minutes in an elevator with, say, President Obama or President Bush, what comments would you make to them about current U.S. counterterrorism strategy?
I think I would tell them that I believe the current counterterrorism strategy is not succeeding because we don't actually understand Al-Qaeda as it stands today. What I've seen is that we're using the same strategy that Bush employed under his administration right after 9/11, and Obama has essentially kept that in place. Meanwhile, the network's adapted. So when we thought that the network would fall apart following the death of Osama bin Laden in May 2011, and then it didn't, that was a call to action for this administration to devote resources to actually understanding what the threat is and who the threat is.
So, Katie, you bring up an interesting point, and that's one that I think a lot of people would agree with, that the network has evolved since 9/11. In the past year, we've seen a lot of Al-Qaeda activity around the world, specifically with what I would call, and we'll get into this a little bit later, the different Al-Qaeda franchises. So with all this franchise activity occurring all over the world, is what we are seeing right now, is this a new normal? Is it fundamentally different than what we were seeing pre-9/11?
What we're seeing today is certainly the new normal for Al-Qaeda, but it's actually in line with what Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri, his successor, had in mind for Al-Qaeda in the 1990s. Then they would send out operatives to different areas of the world, particularly in Somalia, for example, Libya, Algeria, all of the countries today where we see the growth of Al-Qaeda was part of the initial outreach efforts. The difference is that these efforts have translated into unique organizations that have affiliated or associated themselves with the Al-Qaeda network. Whereas before, in the 1990s and the early 2000s, it was very centrally driven out of Afghanistan and then Pakistan. Today, what we see is a much more diffuse network of organizations fighting for the Al-Qaeda network.
So it seems like you would argue that the network has taken on a different shape. I guess my question is now, is it a hierarchical network? Is it an amorphous network? Is it a more disconnected network? How do you see the actual Al-Qaeda network today?
The easiest answer is to say that it's a very complex network. It certainly has aspects of hierarchy. We can see that by the continued petitions to senior leadership from groups in Syria, for example, for mediation or for responses to current events. But it is also one that is relatively flat, that's been developed because of relationships that spread across the regions that Al-Qaeda covers. These are now dispersed throughout the Muslim world, and so they create a human network that cuts across this hierarchical structure. And so the network itself is very, very complicated, and breaking it down to just a simple hierarchy or a blob, if you want to call it that, starts to simplify it in a way that will undermine our efforts to counter it.
You also mentioned that with the death of bin Laden in 2011, that U.S. counterterrorism officials declared this to be a big success and said that Al-Qaeda was on the verge of strategic defeat. So I guess my question is what, in your opinion, what did that event actually mean? Was there any real impact?
There's no argument that bin Laden's death was certainly a major blow to the Al-Qaeda organization as itself. But what was very interesting was the relative ease of the transition to his successor, Zawahiri, whom I mentioned earlier. And also the fact that bin Laden's legacy is not his personality or charisma that drove Al-Qaeda, but rather the ideology that he so well pushed forward throughout the Muslim world to people who would receive it. And it's this ideology that really is at the heart of the Al-Qaeda network and is driving these individuals in their day-to-day life.
And that ideology has seemed to have spread to Al-Qaeda's current partners, and you break them down into two different groups in your report, which I would encourage any of our listeners to read. It's very interesting. So, Katie, you break them down into affiliates and associates. Could you elaborate a little bit further on what you mean by these ideas?
Sure, and I think before I start talking about that, let me take a step back and talk about what those terms mean today to the administration. The administration essentially has divided Al-Qaeda into three different groups. There's the core group, the leadership in Pakistan, so the one that was headed by bin Laden and now by Zawahiri. And then there are the affiliates, so these are the groups that are threatening the United States, that are part of the Al-Qaeda network. And these are regional affiliates, so there's the one in Yemen, the one in Somalia, the one in Iraq. We've heard about all of these groups. And then there are the associates, much less talked about and characterized as very local in threat. They're local in nature. And the administration kind of dismisses them as a local problem. What I've done in my report is actually lay out how we should be thinking about the network. There's still that core Al-Qaeda group, of course. But then when you look at the affiliates and the associates, the only thing that will distinguish an affiliate from an associate is public recognition by the Al-Qaeda network. Al-Qaeda in Yemen, for example, is publicly recognized as being a member of the Al-Qaeda network. But the Tehrik-e-Taliban in Pakistan isn't, and it's an associate. Both of those groups have attempted to attack the United States. Both of them espouse Al-Qaeda's ideology. Both of them work in the Al-Qaeda network and have cooperated with different groups. So they're both as threatening to the United States.
So other than, let's say, that recognition that would come from the core leadership group of Al-Qaeda, is there any operational, I guess, implications of, you know, let's say an affiliate versus an associate? Or would you say that they pretty much behave in a similar fashion?
Well, there is a scale, and there are different levels of affiliation with the Al-Qaeda network, and I've laid that out where you can actually map out groups based on how close they are to mimicking what the core group in Pakistan has done. So AQAP and the Tehrik-e-Taliban in Pakistan are both very close to that core group, but there are associated groups that are loosely affiliated with the network. These are groups such as the ones in Mali, Ansar al-Din. It really does have only a local vision and hasn't yet threatened regionally or even internationally. But what we need to recognize is that all of its operations contribute to the strength of the overall network. And that's why it's important to include these groups when considering what the Al-Qaeda network is today.
So when you say that these groups contribute to each other too, are they sharing resources? Are they just, for lack of a better term, good PR for other jihadist organizations? Or how are they actually, you know, how are they contributing to sort of the greater Al-Qaeda cause?
They're definitely sharing resources. We've seen advice being shared across the region where there are letters sent from senior leaders in Yemen to the ones in Algeria. That's a significant change from what we saw 10 years ago. You know, on the operational level, there's techniques, expertise, fighters, money, arms, materiel. You look at that and all of that moves within this network, taking advantage of illicit smuggling networks that run throughout the Middle East and North Africa.
So speaking of North Africa, as you know, Katie, you just had an article published in the Wall Street Journal about the attacks in Kenya at the Westgate Mall. Quite frankly, does an attack like this in a place like Kenya, is that a big surprise to you?
It's not. And for many Somalia watchers, this was to be expected, though it is certainly outside of the normal. Al-Shabaab had been threatening Kenya for years. And even a year ago, the Kenyan government had come out and said that there were potential for attacks against a target like the mall by Al-Shabaab. What is interesting is the reaction, where analysts are now divided as to whether Al-Shabaab is on its heels or whether it's growing in strength. Some see this attack as an act of desperation, whereas I see it more as an exhibition that Al-Shabaab has given up territorial aims for terrorism, and it's heading down the road that Al-Qaeda in Yemen had traveled.
And speaking of Al-Qaeda in Yemen, they've been in the news lately as well. AQAP was said to have been plotting a series of attacks that actually had a lot of implications for the United States, and specifically United States diplomatic posts abroad. So there's been a lot of news coming out lately about basically the long-term implications for U.S. counterterrorism. Do you have any thoughts on that, on whether these, you know, what these leaks might mean for long-term U.S. counterterrorism implications?
It's actually a major problem for the United States is Al-Qaeda's ability to adapt to our counterterrorism strategies, and that includes how we collect our intelligence. Back in the 2000s, there was a leak saying that the U.S. was using information from satellite phones. And what we saw was that Al-Qaeda in Pakistan stopped using satellite phones. And the same thing is happening today in Yemen, where information was released about how we were collecting information, and we saw the group change its methods. It's not a surprise to see Al-Qaeda try to continue to operate in a covert method. But what we're looking at is an issue of, on the American side, of making sure that our superior intelligence capabilities are kept at the classified level.
So since you mentioned our intelligence gathering capabilities, you guys at the Critical Threats Project are using a lot of advanced sort of analytical tools to conduct a lot of your research. And I guess I'd be remiss, being from Prescient, a company that sits at the intersection of technology and national security, to sort of ask you how you see these tools in the greater combat on the war on terror.
They've really revolutionized how we conduct our analysis. Through Prescient, we have access to a Palantir instance, which has allowed us to collect data from the open source and really parse apart what these groups are doing in a granular level from open source reporting, from social media, from news media, from what the groups are actually putting out about themselves. So we've been able to pull out information and develop a picture of, say, the opposition in Syria, for example, at the Institute for the Study of War, with whom we partner, that is really the best that is available in the open source and probably challenges the level and quality of that on the classified side because of the limited information that we have coming out of some of these conflict areas.
Now, that's a great point, and you also brought up Syria. And there's a lot of Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups that seem to be operating now in Syria, and that presents a major problem for U.S. policymakers and for our administration. A couple of those groups, Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, have really come into the spotlight over the past couple months. You know, how do you see these groups? Do you see their influence growing? Can you give us a breakdown sort of on what these groups are, what they want, and pitfalls that they might create for U.S. policy towards Syria?
The interesting thing is that both of these groups, Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, stem from al-Qaeda in Iraq. That group had essentially been close to defeat before the withdrawal of U.S. troops in 2011 and has since then regained and resurged in the country. During the Arab Spring, it started funding and providing expertise to this new organization, Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, and built it up to be the operational entity that it is today. The other thing that al-Qaeda in Iraq started doing was operating directly in Syria, and that's what ISIS actually is. It's al-Qaeda's front group in Syria. The interplay between these two al-Qaeda affiliates and what they're doing in Syria is extremely interesting to analysts who are looking at the long-term picture of what is al-Qaeda's goal with Syria, what's happening in Iraq, and how is it playing out in Syria. Do they want to establish an Islamic caliphate? Do they want a state? Or are they happy simply carving off part of Syria as they've already done? The tragedy, though, is that because of the lack of Western support to the secular opposition, al-Qaeda really has a strong grasp on the conflict in Syria and has the momentum to a certain degree within that conflict and is on solid footing there.
You know, we've been sort of taking the fight to al-Qaeda and to its various branches for a long time, over a decade now, if you say that, you know, if you make the argument that we started after 9/11. So if you were to give us a grade, us being the United States and our allies, what would your grade be and why?
I think that we did an A job in Pakistan, where we have devoted the majority of our military assets that have been dedicated to fighting al-Qaeda, and really have decimated the senior leadership of al-Qaeda in Pakistan. That's the only place that I think it's fair to say al-Qaeda is on the run or on the ropes. Elsewhere in the world, it has been very, very mediocre. We haven't seen success in Yemen. We haven't seen success in Somalia. We've seen actually growth in both places. Growth in West Africa, in North Africa, and a new affiliate blossoming in Syria, as well as the resurgence of one in Iraq. So when you start looking at that information, you really see that the U.S. has failed to fight al-Qaeda outside of the Afghanistan-Pakistan region.
Well, Katie, thank you very much for your time today, and thank you very much for the insight on al-Qaeda. We really appreciate it and look forward to potentially talking with you again on another Prescient State of Points podcast.